Hello, and thanks for joining the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash. Quick note to our listeners, this Tirreno-Adriatico pre-race show was recorded and published before a flurry of late changes to the race outlook, among them the withdrawals of Chris Froome and Marcel Kittel, and the change of Stage 1 from a team time trial into an individual time trial. We're adding this post-publication edit to keep you informed, and also to say that Cosmo and I cover so many aspects of this Tirreno-Adriatico that there should still be plenty here to get you prepared, including some insights from a very special guest star who could be right up there in the thick of the GC battle. Hope you'll enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I am Cosmo Catalano.
And we are at it again for Tirreno Adriatico, the race of the two seas, 7 days of stage racing in Italy. It is the third World Tour race of the season, but the first World Tour appearance for many, if not most, of the major star riders on the start list. So our first opportunity to see some of the biggest names in the sport riding at the highest level of competition.
Yeah, unless you count those other big names in the sport riding at the highest level simultaneously in France for some reason.
That's true.
I think for calendar reform, one of the things it would be great to see is not these two races on top of each other. I think it would be pretty easy to have one race 1 week and the next race the next week so that, you know, there wasn't this constant battle between, well, what happened there, what happened here, like... I feel like one race at a time is a pretty good way to let people see what's going on in the sport if they're just kind of coming in and taking a look around. It can be overwhelming when there's three different competitors at three different races on the same day or on the same weekend.
I can get behind that. It's never easy to explain why only some of the top riders are at one race and only some of them are at another. Although I will say that after several weeks of no World Tour racing... I'm not going to mind being able to watch two races in one day. It'll kind of be a nice little return. And the big four are at Tirreno Adriatico. That's the big storyline here. Alberto Contador, Chris Froome, Nairo Quintana, Vincenzo Nibali, your four biggest Tour de France favorites for later on in the season. And in general, behind them, there's just a powerhouse start list. Even the wild cards here are worthy. The teams like Bora Argon, Europcar, MTN Quebeca, Team Colombia will be here enjoying a makeup invite, if you will, after getting snubbed by RCS for the Giro.
Yeah, I mean, any time Team Colombia isn't in the Giro is, I mean, how can you watch what they've done the past few years and think, nah, I don't want those guys in my race this year? I mean, they're really aggressive. They really animate. They may not have... They've seen a lot of their top guys kind of go on to World Tour teams, and that's sort of the point of their squad. But I don't think that's any reason to prevent, you know, the next level of or the next generation of Colombian riders from having that big stage to perform on.
Yeah, and no disrespect to CCC, maybe a little disrespect to Southeast Pro Cycling. You have to think that they really deserve that invite the way that they've ridden in the Giro the last couple of years.
Yeah, you could also make a case for United Healthcare. I mean, they got Brajkovic, who's a guy who has definitely shown the ability to compete in a race like this. He's also kind of coming off, you know, I mean, there are a lot of stories out there from Astana refugees right now that make it seem like not a great place to ride. And yeah, I think, especially given the drama around the rest of their team, it's important to sort of support the flight from organizations like that. United Healthcare could totally be here and totally be competing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I spoke to Brajkovic a couple weeks back, and he used the word depressed. He literally used the word depressed to describe his state of emotion while he was riding for Astana. So he seems much happier now. It would have been great to see him in that more motivated state riding here. He's actually top five here several years back, so it's a shame that we won't be able to get to see him competing here.
Now, when you say you spoke to him, was that an interview?
That was actually an interview. It was indeed.
Yeah, and where could we find that interview if we wanted to read more of it?
If you wanted to read more, you can find that on velohuman.com, which you should definitely check out this afternoon, maybe after you've watched the How the Race Was Won for Strada Bianca over at cyclocosm.com. Just a thought.
For our listeners, we are recording this before you actually hear it, so I haven't made that video yet. But thank you for putting me on the spot to get it done on time.
I'm assuming it's going to get done. So,
yeah, and I mean, I guess we can't talk about Tirreno without talking about the trophy, which I think is one of the best in cycling right now. I mean, it's just, it's always difficult to describe with words because you have to see it. It's this gigantic, gaudy metal trident. It would totally fit in the background of some, you know, 1970s organized crime disco cocaine movie. It just gaudy and overbuilt, and yet still like there's an edgy like heavy metalness to it. It's just this wonderful fusion of horrible styles that somehow works to represent this race. There's an Italianness to it too. Again, really hard to describe, but you got to see this thing, especially because every year the winner gets up on the podium and pretends he's throwing it around like it's a real trident, which is always hilarious with skinny biker arms. But yeah, just beautifully done. I hope they keep it for the next two decades.
Certainly the most unique of the trophies on the world tour. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by a special guest, one of the GC contenders for this race, who, let's say he may have been in the top 10 in the past two Tours de France, or maybe he's a former Vuelta points champ. I don't know. You'll find out. First, we're going to jump into the route and we're going to figure out just exactly what these riders are going to be taking on over the course of the next week. All right, let's take a look at the parkour for Tirreno Adriatico. Things kick off with a 22.7-kilometer out-and-back team time trial. It's pan-flat, long enough that there will be some gaps, though. Not big on the way that they're starting this race, to be honest. You're basically telling the lower-budget World Tour teams, some of the wild card squads, hey, we don't really want a rider from your team to win this race. And you know, add to that I don't think it's going to be all that exciting.
I mean, the thing with team time trials is they are the most obvious expression of teamwork in cycling. Like, everybody can look at a team time trial and see a team that's rotating well, that has a lot of guys, that isn't moving like an amorphous blob, and be like, oh, cool. Whereas, you know, it's not so obvious in a mass start stage. You kind of have to know how tactics work. I mean, I agree, it's definitely a disadvantage for the smaller teams, but at the same time, it's good to see the obvious teamwork, and it's, you know, I mean, this really is also a hedge against the teams that pick up that one guy coming off a dope suspension. They have, you know, a 22-rider roster, 21 guys are scrubs you've never heard of, and one guy is a former doper. Like, this prevents, you know, Ricardo Rico from reappearing and winning Tirreno Adriatico in 2019, would it be?
Fair point. There's going to be a little bit of wind. I guess that could make it kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's right on the coast.
Yeah, true. Stage two, after we've settled into a GC with maybe a couple of different gaps, stage two is going to be a pretty standard sprint stage. Doesn't look like there's going to be a lot to keep the fast men from reaching the line in a big group. Stage three, on the other hand, 203 kilometers from Cassina to Arezzo may not appear that interesting on the profile, but there are a few challenges along the way.
Yeah, I mean, stage three is quite a bit harder than it looks. You know, you could look at the profile and think, oh, it's a sprint stage, but the last kilometer is really uphill. It's 5%, which is not enough, generally speaking, to keep most sprinters out of the picture. But it's also cobbles, and there is a super steep section right at the beginning of this 5% average. So I think you could really see, you know, more of a classic-y guy, someone with some power, rather than just that ability to ride a good lead out and put in that big 5-second acceleration. This is going to be more of a more of a grind, more of a drag. And I think you could see someone like Sagan really come up with it here. In fact, it's very similar to a stage last year, which Sagan won over Kwiatkowski.
Pretty much the same, and the same finishing climb. And there were a few gaps at the finish line in last year's edition. So a day where the GC riders are going to need to get up there and fight with the punchier stars of the race to make sure they don't lose any time. Stage 4, another pretty difficult day. 218 kilometers, it's the longest stage in the race. A lot of up and down. The tough Poggio San Romualdo in the middle of the stage, and then they do the Crispiero climb, which is pretty nasty, twice at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I think of when I think of stage racing in Italy. I mean, you've got this finishing circuit. It's treacherous. I mean, you look at the route profile, and there are little triangular hazard signs all over the place for sharp corners and steep grades. The last GPM is the last KOM, I guess, would be the phrase. It says GPM in the route guide, but the last one of those is 4K from the end, and it's downhill all the way into the last kilometer. There is sort of a flat uphill at the finish. If you were looking to make a non-GC day potentially have a GC impact or just have ridiculous, unpredictable racing, this is a great way to do it.
I think there really could be a GC impact, especially if somebody tries to go for a long one on one of those late climbs, which I think is almost certain to happen. So GC guys are going to, I was going to say they're going to have to be on their toes. The GC guys may just be the ones driving the race here. Stage 5, probably the most difficult GC day. Some early climbs and then a pretty vicious Terminillo climb to a summit finish at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a tough climb. Not quite what Tirreno has featured in the past. There's nothing, there's not a real headline grabber in it. It's not, you know, 30% grade. It's not, you know, paved with human skulls, but it's tough. And I think, especially at this point in the season, a lot of people are coming into shape, and you'll probably see a pretty big gruppetto. It does flatten out a little bit at the top. So if people come in together, speed will come into play rather than just climbing prowess. So,
although I wonder how many are going to come in together across over 16 kilometers at over a 7% average. That's going to be pretty hard to sustain a sizable group at that.
Yep. But I mean, if, you know, even if three guys come in, it could be a sprint.
True. Stage 6, on the other hand, almost definitely going to be a large group reaching the finish, downhill all the way to a likely sprint. Stage 7, very short, 10-kilometer individual time trial, last day of the race, and the last day for any kind of GC contention, although I wonder how much of a GC battle we're going to get across something that small.
Yeah, I mean, it's short, and it's flat, and there really aren't corners, I guess. You could kind of actually say there's only two corners. One of the turnaround points maybe could potentially shake some stuff up in the rain. But yeah, not a great way to finish this race in terms of giving people who aren't going to do well on that climb a chance to finish well. I was actually pretty excited the first time I saw this stage on the Gazzetta site because it was listed as a team time trial. And I thought that would be, as much as you don't like team time trials, I thought that would be a really bold way to kind of finish up the race. But this is kind of standard, and I guess it's difficult with the time trial to really determine how big you want it for a one-week stage race.
Maybe RCS will mix it up on the last day and actually make it a team time trial, just, you know, for fun.
That would be something that would certainly get headlines.
I wonder how many teams would not have enough riders to to even take part, especially after stages 4 and 5.
I mean, they could change the rules. They could make it so only 3 people had to finish or whatever.
It's cycling. They can change the rules in the middle of the race if they want to.
Yeah.
So stages 3, 4, and 5, probably your major GC days, or at least the days where the GC riders are going to be most on their toes. This race could be decided in the middle, and then we could have our winner pretty much known before we get to the end of the race. But again, this is cycling, and anything can happen. So that's it for the route. I think we can now jump into this really impressive start list and just try to figure out who the riders are to watch and maybe who's here and who we think might surprise you and who has the most interesting storylines coming with them to Tirreno Adriatico. We'll start at the obvious starting point, the big 4. This is our first chance really to see them go at it. No question, the biggest storyline of the start list is the clash of the big 4. I think maybe a couple of weeks ago, if you'd asked me who was probably going to be in the best shape right about now, I would have just kind of said Contador by default, because he is planning to head to the Giro while the other three are not taking on the Giro and therefore might be peaking a little later in the season. But Froome and Contador just squared off in the Ruta del Sol, and Froome actually emerged victorious there. So that's kind of interesting way to kick off this battle, in that we've seen Froome through the first punch, and I'm wondering, is Contador going to be able to come back and respond here in Tirreno Adriatico?
Yeah, maybe. It's always tough to tell, I think, with Contador, because he's a guy who's even when he's not on top form, he's somebody who will attack and animate a race. I mean, you saw it at the Tour a few years ago, 2 years ago maybe, where he just didn't look like himself, but still went out there and went after it. And I feel like a race like this is short enough where if you have that capacity and that kind of bulldogginess, and someone else has a bad day, there could be no time to make up for it. You know, there isn't that grinding you get with a Grand Tour, where it really is who can do the least to lose the race. The number of stages you have, the greater that number is, the less chance, you know, one thing is going to upset the predicted outcome.
He was pretty unbelievable here last year. Froome gets to enjoy the support of New Sky Editions' Leopold Koenig, a Tour de France top 10 finisher last year, and Wout Poels, a strong all-rounder who was really a key domestique for Rigoberto Urán last year, in addition to nabbing a few results for himself. And that's going to make Team Sky even more dangerous than they already are, so I'm interested to see how they all work together to try to put Froome into the leader's jersey here. Definitely not going to be easy for the other teams to challenge them, especially on some of these really slogging climbs where you kind of expect the Sky train to come out and start riding in full force.
Contador's biggest support rider is probably Roman Kreuziger, who is currently, you know, he's up in the air status-wise.
Yeah, waiting for further information regarding a potential suspension. But he looked pretty good both in Oman and Strada Bianca, so as long as he is racing, he's a rider to keep an eye on. Meanwhile, we should bring Nairo Quintana back into this conversation. He's also shown good form in the Tour de San Luis.
Quintana is, you know, he's always a little tough to read, especially because his season starts so early. I thought he looked great at San Luis. Certainly, like, he was in the mix against guys who maybe you've never heard of, but they're also guys who are in the best shape they're going to be in. Like, San Luis is their Tour de France. And so to see him, you know, in the mix against those guys, I think it's a good sign. I don't know that he's coming here to win, but he's certainly a guy who's not going to just, you know, phone it in. I think we'll see him up there, but I don't think we'll see him take stages.
I think Quintana is an interesting case because he was second here last year, and I wouldn't say he was a close second because Contador was just a world ahead of everybody else last year. But even last year, I think coming in, there was some question, well, is Quintana really going to be on great form? How much is he really going to care? Turned out he cared a lot, and he put in a pretty great ride. I'm not sure he's going to be quite at that level as Froome and Contador, but I think he's got a great chance of being up there. That final time trial, as short as it is, maybe not the greatest thing for him. But on the other hand, Movistar's got a great team time trial, so that could help out his GC bid. And for Quintana, this is a year where I expect him to take every opportunity to mix it up with Froome and Contador, and of course Nibali, because this is the year where those other three guys have already won their Tour de France, and I think Quintana feels that now's the time. He's ready to take on the Tour, and this is a great opportunity for him to get a test against his biggest rivals for the Tour.
But do you think he really wants the big test? I mean, if you look at his Giro last year, he was really kind of laid back, and then on one big day he took it with authority. It's almost like he's less concerned against testing himself against his rivals as he is making sure his rivals don't end up with an opportunity to try and to ride against him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. He did have a pretty quiet start to the Giro last year, and then, yeah, took it all at once. I do think, however, that he's not going to get much of an opportunity to measure himself against these other riders, and so why not? This is such a rare opportunity, all these four guys coming here together. We are kind of leaving Vincenzo Nibali out of the conversation, which it is pretty much because he's probably the least favorite of the big four at this race due to kind of a lack of any recent displays of good form. He kind of did this last year where he took a pretty slow route to getting into shape for the Tour, and then all of a sudden there he was up with the best, and then of course he won the whole thing. For this race though in particular, despite the fact that he's a former winner, he's not shown quite the same level of form in the pre-race run-up that would lead me to believe he's going to be able to battle it out with his big four rivals. That said, Nibali is just a great all-round rider. He can climb, he can time trial, he can descend obviously really well. He's riding on home roads. And just as he showed last year in the Tour de France, he can kick into gear very quickly, even after not being in great shape. So certainly a potential for him to kind of come out of nowhere and suddenly have good form. I just don't quite see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, he was tailed off the back pretty soundly at Strada Bianca.
Right.
And of course, there is the, you know, consideration that his entire team is probably not going to exist in another 3 weeks, at least in its current incarnation. So you might see a lot of guys maybe breaking rank and just kind of riding to get noticed, to kind of pad their resumes. I mean, obviously in cycling, what people say about you, you know, your reputation counts for a lot. But some of these guys, you know, especially the Kazakhs, who aren't going to be able to rely on their connections, they're really going to be looking to do something to get someone to notice them, so that when the wheels fall off the Astana bus, they've got somewhere to hitch a ride.
Right. How much teamwork can you really expect when your team's going to be gone in a couple of weeks, or at least it may be gone in a couple of weeks? There's certainly that possibility that everybody's going to be every man for himself out there in this World Tour level race, trying to show off that they've got that ability.
Yep. And I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing for viewers. I look at a guy like Rodriguez, who is getting on in years, but he's a guy who can mix it up and race anywhere, and he's here. I don't know that he's going to be a GC contender, but I definitely expect him to do some stuff to play a role. So,
yeah, Rodriguez last year kind of had his early season robbed from him by injury. And so who knows really what his goals are for this early season. Obviously, he'll probably want to be in good shape for the Ardennes. Does that mean he's in good shape right now? Not sure. But whenever a race has a profile that really favors the prototypical GC guys, Joaquin Rodriguez is always up there. So expecting something from him. So we're getting away from the big four. We're kind of talking about some GC contenders who might be viewed as outsiders here. A rider I'm really looking forward to see at this course is Rigoberto Urán, who a couple of years ago was a star climber, and that's really what he was. All of a sudden, in the last 2 years, he's become a time-trialing machine, and I'm not really sure where it came from, but it's been really impressive to watch him develop as a more complete rider. He was just so strong in the Giro time trial last year. And he just last month won Colombia's time trial championship. So a rider who we thought might have just be a pure climber a couple of years ago is suddenly this complete climber / time trialist in a race that is really going to favor the prototypical GC type riders, which is what he has developed into. So I'll be really excited to see him taking on the big dogs in a race with plenty of time trial mileage.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool to see a climber improve their time trialing. I simply because I think it's a lot more believable than things going the other way around. You definitely there's a ton of time you can save, and you hear it in every aero equipment ad ever. If you really focus on getting yourself into a good position and building muscle strength in that position. And I think it's really cool that Urán has sort of kicked the quick step curse for GC riders. I mean, it used to be every 2 or 3 years, Lefebvre would get another guy and you'd never hear from him again. Jose Rujano comes to mind. Way back, Pecharoman, I think, was a Spaniard who changed over to quick step. And yeah, so it's cool. I'm looking forward to see what he does too. Speaking of changing teams, we've got Bauke Mollema now riding for Trek Factory Racing, and certainly a guy who's shown some strong GC abilities in the past, and coming in with a pretty strong team, especially for the team time trial.
Yeah, a good time trialing squad. Mollema himself, another rider who's kind of working to improve his time trial. And he also has Julian Arredondo, a great explosive climber in the squad. And that gives Trek a lot of firepower to take on the likes of Froome and Contador. And you have to expect Mollema to come out guns blazing riding for his new team to prove to them that he's worth the trust as the new GC man. So a lot of storylines to keep in mind for Mollema. And Cosmo and I thought that made him a pretty good rider to talk to. So that's what we decided to do. Let's hear what Bauke himself has to say about the race. Bauke, thanks for carving out a few minutes to chat today. Welcome to the Recon Ride.
Thank you.
Cosmo and I have been talking about this race, the route, the many big riders on the start list. I imagine that you're looking at the same things. Can you give us an idea of your off-season prep coming in, your training for this race, where you're at right now?
It's the first really big race for me of the season, the first World Tour race. And, you know, if you look at the riders who will be there, it's going to be really hard. All the GC riders are there. Guys like Froome, Quintana, Nibali, Contador. So, no, I've been training really hard last month to put a good base level for the season. And, you know, I'm really looking forward now to fight with the big guys.
Speaking of big names, your own team Trek with plenty of big name riders here. Can you give us a sense of the role you're settling into? You also have Julian Arredondo here. I'm curious, how are you guys going to play off of each other in this race?
Yeah, well, I think we're both in good shape. And he finished, I think, fifth last year or maybe fourth. So it's a race that suits him also. And, you know, I think we have two guys who can do GC to climbers, and for the rest we have a lot of strong guys for the flat, guys like Cancellara, Popovic, De Volder is there, Hayden Rolston. So we have a lot of firepower for the flat. It's also very important, I think, for the team time trial the first day. And then, you know, there's an uphill finish of I think 16 kilometers the fourth or fifth day. And I think that stage is going to be decisive for the general classification. And, you know, I think Julian and me, we can help together this stage and play a big role in the final. That's the plan.
Right. Is there a particular stage that stands out to you when you look at the road book as the stage where this race is going to be decided?
Well, of course, every stage is important. And I think it starts with the team time trial. And it's more than 20 kilometers. And I think we have a great team for that. Guys like Fabio, you know, he's so strong in time trialing. So, yeah, we hope to win time on a lot of GC riders there already. And then, yeah, there's a few tricky stages with short climbs. But I think the GC will be decided in the uphill finish, 16 kilometers. So it's a really long climb. It's a big road, not too technical, not too many corners. So just a climb for strong guys. And you have to be able to push a lot of watts that day for more than half an hour. So that stage will be the most important, I think. But then on the last day, there's a short time trial of about 10 kilometers. So, yeah, maybe if the differences are still small, that can be decisive also.
Tirreno Adriatico sort of has a reputation of having really brutal courses, some really steep climbs. How do you feel about that, yep, kind of pushing the ability of what the riders can do?
Well, especially last year, there have been a really few steep climbs in the parkour in Tirreno Adriatico. I think last year we did a climb that was about 30% for a few hundred meters. So, yeah, the riders were going so slow over there, and some people in the back, they had to be pushed by the spectators. But yeah, that's Italy, and you know, I like those parkours. It's hard, but you know, it's part of cycling. And also this year, there's one stage with a really steep climb, about 5 kilometers before the finish, I think the fifth or the sixth stage. So yeah, it's nice to see, to watch also for television, I think. And it's just part of the game.
When you look at this start list, obviously so many top GC names here. Are you able to pinpoint one or two riders that you see as the top rivals for the general classification?
Yeah, I think there's so many GC riders in Tirreno. I think a lot more than in Paris-Nice. And then, yeah, of course, Froome, Nibali, Contador. I think those riders are the biggest favorites for me. Especially if you look at the parcours and both time trials. So yeah, those are the riders to watch. But you know, you never know. I really hope that I can show that I made a step this winter. I've been training hard last month. So yeah, last year I was never that good in Tirreno already. I needed maybe a bit more time to get in my good shape, but you know, I've been feeling good this week and did a really good ride also today, more than 5.5 hours with some good effort. So well, I'm feeling good and just hope to show it and give a good result to the team.
It's pretty early in the season still, but are you looking at Tirreno as a build-up race, or you're really focused on winning it? It seems like you say you're in pretty good shape now, so...
Yeah, I think I'm in pretty good shape. You know, I don't see Tirreno as a build-up race. No, it's a really important race. It's a World Tour race, and World Tour ranking is important for the team also, Track Factory Racing. So, no, for sure, we will try to finish as high as possible in the general classification. And, you know, it's really hard with all those GC riders who are there, but no, I'm feeling good and really looking forward to fight with them.
So, yeah, do you feel that you have the form to be up there with the top podium contenders in this race, assuming everything goes according to plan along the way?
Yes, if everything goes well, I think, it's possible for sure. I think if we do a good team time trial the first day, then you start the week well. And, you know, with the uphill finishes, I think it's a climb that suits me well. I did it in the Giro d'Italia once, and it's a nice climb. And, you know, I think I can do well, but, you know, you have to stay healthy, stay on the bike, and you know, I think we have a good team to lead me into the climb. So no, I'm really confident we can do well.
Are you going to be following Paris-Nice at all during Tirreno?
Oh, it will be hard to follow Paris-Nice because you know, we have this stage during the day, and I think at the same time they're racing in Paris-Nice, but sometimes after the finish, if you have to do like a 1 or 2 hour ride with the bus to the hotel, there's some time to watch television. And yeah, hopefully we can see some of Paris-Nice. But yeah, I think we are mainly focused on Tirreno ourselves and to recover as good as possible from the race.
Speaking of Paris-Nice, your compatriot and former teammate Wilco Kelderman's going to be there. Can you tell us, do you feel that now that you're on different teams, is there any kind of rivalry there? A competition maybe to be the best Dutch stage racer on the scene right now?
No, I don't look at it like that. You know, of course, there's rivalry and then competition. And, you know, I'm looking forward to race with him. And I hope, yeah, they're in the races we do together. We can both fight for GC. But, you know, he's a great guy and I have a good relationship with him. So, yeah, I wish him all the best for Paris-Nice. You know, it would be nice if he can do well. Already last year, he was, I think, in really good shape. But he had some bad luck in one stage where he lost, a top five spot. But, no, I wish him all the best. And, you know, I will see him in Pays Basque a few weeks later.
Right. Bauke, I think we've had our questions answered. Thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us today.
You're welcome.
And good luck out there.
Okay, thank you.
Again, that was Bauke Mollema, back-to-back Tour de France top 10 finisher. Also won the Vuelta points classification a few years back. Hoping to be up there with the big GC riders in this race. With that 1-2 punch of Mollema and again, Julian Arredondo, who is looking to feature on the Ardennes Classics this year, Trek will certainly have the weapons to light up the race.
Yep. There's actually a bunch of guys who may be looking at other objectives, specifically the Ardennes, but are just kind of good. Ryder Heijedal, former Giro winner, don't necessarily think he's here for a big result. I think he may, again, be a distraction for other riders so that Dan Martin gets a smoother ride. We definitely saw that at Tour of Beijing last year. And to my mind, Martin is sort of becoming their B stage race guy. Like, he's definitely got the ability to stick in there and be in the lead group for most of the race. Probably not a guy who's going to be able to win without some misfortune befalling his competitors, but a great rider and an exciting one to watch. As we saw at Liège last year, maybe not always in the best way, but I think it's great. I love both sides of the Dan Martin coin.
I was kind of glad to see him up there in the top 10 of the Vuelta last year, just because he did prove, hey, if everything does go my way, which doesn't always happen, I can be up here in the top 10 of a Grand Tour. Another kind of Grand Tour top 10 type of guy, Thibaut Pinot, is here. Form kind of unknown. Don't really know what he's expecting to come out of this race. But this is a guy who finished on the podium at the Tour de France last year, and he's still only 24 years old. So I would imagine only getting better for the next couple of years. And kind of like Oran, becoming a more complete rider, hoping to mix it up with the big dogs. Now's a great opportunity with the big four here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's some resource for French cycling that just never gets translated into English. Like, I feel like there must be more information on these guys, French riders, that is, that I just never hear about. And you see the stuff that's written in Dutch, which applies both to the Netherlands and to Belgium. It's on the front page of Cycling News the day after it's published in those countries. And on that note, you know, I see a guy like Jürgen Vandenbroek, who's definitely proven talent in GC races. Maybe some proven bad luck, but somebody who can probably do something here.
Yep. Kind of on the other end of the coin from Mollema, maybe coming down from better times. We've also got Carlos Betancourt and Domenico Pozzovivo here for AG2R. Really don't know what to expect from Betancourt. Supposedly he's back in the right mindset this season. Don't really know whether to believe that or not. Domenico Pozzovivo, always a nice rider who has had a great last few years. Couple other names to watch on the start list as outsiders. Louis Menches from Team MTKN Quebec. He's had a nice little early start to the season, and this is a good opportunity for him to race with some of the top names of the World Tour level in a major stage race.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's weird to think, but Europcar is also kind of in that position. Like, they're not a World Tour team anymore. So it's a little, I'm wondering what their expectations are going to be coming into this race. They're obviously going to have French platforms throughout the season, but this could be one of their few opportunities to race World Tour outside of France.
Yeah.
I also wonder, you know, Pierre Rolland is a guy who has shown enough GC ability, I think, to do well and factor in a race like this, maybe even win it. And it's always, with Volkler there, it's always, you know, it's always the scattershot approach to race tactics, and Volkler is not there. So it'll be cool to see if they try and support him in a logical fashion instead of doing what they normally do.
Which may or may not happen, especially with that opening team time trial, which may put them out of contention pretty early. Another just wildcard team that I'll be interested to see is Team Colombia. Fabio Duarte re-signing with them this offseason, and always good in Italy. They certainly make the race interesting. Getting away from the GC contenders a little bit, some of the sprinters that we're going to be watching, that list has to start with Mark Cavendish and Marcel Kittel. This will be a great battle between the two riders, an opportunity to see them go head-to-head. Cavendish coming in with some nice results in the last couple weeks. Marcel Kittel, not so much. So we'll be wondering which rider is in form. Is either one of them really focused on doing well here? And if so, who's going to be the winner of this matchup?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of the storylines through the past couple seasons have been, you know, Cav kind of losing his spot as top dog to Kittel. And I thought at KBK, we saw pure vintage 24-year-old Cavendish. I mean, the sprint was an absolute war zone, people bouncing off each other. His lead out guy got tied up in a minor kind of bump, and he got around it. He found a way through the mess, was, you know, a length and a half down on Christoph when Christoph launched. And Christoph is a guy who's really hard to chase down. And Cav made it look easy. I mean, he had time to finish, to celebrate before the finish line. I'm really excited to see them duel. Kittel definitely, I don't know. I mean, would you say Kittel is historically a slow starter?
I would say he is a slow starter. Last year, he was nowhere to be found in this race. Of course, it didn't matter when you looked at him later in the year, but I'm not sure Tirreno Adriatico is a real priority for him, and he hasn't really done anything in the beginning of the year so far, other than his win at the People's Choice Classic in Australia, which I'm not really sure how much stock to put into that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
For Kittel, to me, it would be a little surprising to see Kittel actually racing at the top level, especially with the way we saw this workout last year when he came and did nothing at all in this race.
I mean, it's definitely worth mentioning. There are other sprinters here, maybe not at the same tier as Cavendish and Kittel, but I personally am curious to see how Sam Bennett does. He had a big win at Qatar, which is really a sprinter's race. Granted, the best guy behind him was probably the best guy behind him who was in the sprint was probably Nasser Bouhanni, who hasn't had a great start, but certainly one of the guys I'll be watching for.
Also, Elia Viviani here for Team Sky. He had a nice February, and I think is going to be a rider on his new team. He's going to have a lot of opportunities. There's not a lot of other sprinters on Team Sky, not a lot of other pure field sprinters on Team Sky, that is. And this will be a nice opportunity for him to race again on home roads, for whatever that's worth. Matteo Pellucchi won a stage here last year ahead of Kittel, Cavendish, and Greipel. And he's looked very strong at the beginning of this season. So that's a rider I think is going to be really exciting to watch here, given the way he's been riding these last couple weeks. Tyler Farrer also here. And of course, Peter Sagan is here.
Yeah. I mean, the question with Sagan is what is he doing here? A guy who I think is really becoming more of a classics rider. And I get that he could be using this for training, but at the same time, like, I don't see it. I don't see the master plan here. He's certainly a contender for stage three, but in terms of just picking up sprints and working on sprinting, I don't see it happening here. I see him kind of not being an active detriment to Contador's campaign for the GC, but at the same time, not a guy who's going to be, you know, pulling back brakes and leading him into climbs.
Right. Sagan, not really the only classics rider here. There's actually quite an impressive list of classic stars on this start list. So in addition to Peter Sagan, Zdenek Stibar, Ian Standard on the provisional start list, Fabio Cancellara, Nicky Terpstra, Sepp van Marck, maybe Greg Van Avermaet, depending on his situation. It'll be exciting to watch on any of these stages that have maybe a couple of bumps near the finish. And then that final ITT, which you would imagine would really favor some of these classics guys who can really put out a lot of wattage for a short period of time.
Yep, and know how to handle the bike, because it is in a city, and there may be, you know, your typical weird Italian road surfacing.
True.
I'm also kind of looking at Pim Ligtart. Previous to this season, he has really been a strong man in the breakaways. He's taken mountains classifications. He's been Combativity Prize winner in days at the Vuelta. And then this year he's won like two or three kind of legit group sprints. And granted, it's still March, you know, these are February races he's picking up, but like that's just a bizarre transition to me. But it'll be curious to see, you know, what he does out on the roads.
It was pretty cool seeing Pim Ligtart in a sprint, and I have no idea what to expect from him in this race. Hopefully we'll have a chance to see him featured on a couple of days. Plenty of big names to talk about. I think we've hit on most of them, and I'm ready to get into that part of the show where Cosmo and I tell you the riders we think are going to be right up there on the podium. Cosmo, let's see if we can't come up with our predictions for this race, or at least the top three. You seem to do so well going first at Paris-Nice. I'll let you have that honor again here.
All right. I think for my overall podium, I'm going to have to go with Alberto Contador. Even though he did lose to Froome at Ruta del Sol, it was kind of a one-day thing. He had some fairly compelling victories over Froome earlier in the race, including in a short TT relatively similar to the one at the end of this race. In fact, I actually think Quintana is probably going to do better than Froome too. Just because, like I said, I thought he looked really good at Tour San Luis. And it's, you know, there aren't a lot of big time trials where Froome is going to open up the space on Quintana. So I have him in number two, and then Froome in third, because his team is, I mean, I feel like if they wanted to make Geraint Thomas third at this race, they'd have a pretty good shot at it, because that's how good their team is.
I see the same top three, maybe a different order, though. For me, Froome's Vuelta a Andalusia ride was more impressive than maybe it looks at first glance. I think that opening time trial where he did lose time to Contador, it was a pretty technical ride. I think he was kind of just taking it easy. And then the stage that followed where Contador put a lot of time into him on that first mountain stage, Froome was pretty far back when Contador launched his attack, and he ended up surprisingly finishing just behind him. And I was pretty impressed with the way he climbed to close some of that gap. And then, of course, on the stage where he took the overall win, he was unstoppable. So I see Froome in pretty good form here. And I think with this team and this parkour, which I would see suiting him pretty well, I like Froome as the top favorite for Tirreno Adriatico. Contador, such a machine here last year. So really close call between the two. I'd love to see this battle go down to the wire. And I do think that Nairo Quintana, especially the way he rode here last year, despite coming in with kind of unknown expectations, I think he's going to be gunning for a victory and an opportunity to show off his medal against these two other guys. So I see Contador and Quintana on the other two steps of the podium, but For me, Froome goes in as the favorite. All right, we've given you our predictions. We've put ourselves on the line here. Whatever happens, this is going to be an awesome competition. We've got so many huge names here, a battle between the sport's biggest GC stars, the two fastest sprinters.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I want to say, as much as I am saying that there is more to cycling than just the Grand Tours, I'm looking forward to this race. I wish I were not looking forward to watching this race while another race is already in progress. But if I have to pick TA or Paris-Nice, I'll probably go with TA just because it's the most like that idealized compressed Grand Tour format I was talking about earlier. I think they could make the time trial a little longer, but by and large, I think this is what I'm looking for. I can't even say it's what I'm looking for, but this is closer to what I'm, this is the closest to what I'm looking for in a week-long stage race of the 2 week-long stage races going on this month.
Yeah, it seems like Chris Froome, Alberto Contador, Nairo Quintana, and Vincenzo Nibali all agreed with you, so it'll just be nice to see how it all plays out. That does it for the Recon Ride for Tirreno Adriatico. We'll be back for Milano Sanremo, another huge race in Italy. But until then, I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.